Welcome back to This Little Life, an impromptu and lively discussion diving into the big and little issues of parenting and beyond. Hello, I'm Elke Pascoe, founder and CEO of Little Oak. We've been recording This Little Life podcast for some time now, and every so often there is a story that gives you pause and opens your eyes to the experiences of other people's lives. And today's story is one of those, a remarkable journey of two parents on the quest to fatherhood. Now, today's episode is likely to pull on your heartstrings. It's one of diversity, but also one that is likely to polarize. But ultimately, it's a story of courage, and one that at Little Oak we are very proud to share. Today I am joined by a beautiful couple, Adam and Justin Rowe, who are on their journey to becoming a family through surrogacy. We all know that the journey to parenthood for so many isn't just as easy as having a baby. In fact, some families struggle to conceive, some try and try without luck, and increasingly some couples have to share the conception experience with others. Collectively, there are many highs and lows becoming parents, and no two journeys are the same. But we firmly believe that all these stories need to be shared. And today we're just so excited to share Adam and Justin's surrogacy journey with intent of helping other couples who are considering or are currently on the path of surrogacy. So gentlemen, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah. Hi. So I'm very excited to hear or understand how and where you first met.
So we first met at the gym. So we went to the same gym and I was just doing a normal workout and Justin very bravely approached me.
Lucky boy.
Struck up a conversation.
Now, we did have a little help from a certain location-based dating website.
Yes.
So
he knew there was...
There was some interest there.
There was some interest already. Yeah. Conveniently, we lived across the road from each other, as it turned out. Yeah. So,
really?
Yeah.
These apps, I tell you, modern romance. I love it. And so, I understand you've been married now for about a year.
Yes. Coming up, our anniversary's in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. We were very, very lucky to get married kind of in between lockdowns last year. Originally, we were meant to get married the year before, but it did get postponed once.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, that's good. And did you manage to get actually guests at your wedding or was
We did. We pretty much had a very normal, wouldn't have known there was any sort of restriction or pandemic going on.
This is amazing. I'm so happy for you. I don't know how many people I've met that have either had to not been married or they've had it with like 20 people. Yeah. It's just been the worst. So you've been married nearly a year, which is fabulous. Congratulations. So tell me, when did you start the discussion around exploring or wanting to become parents?
It was pretty early in our relationship.
It was very early on.
Yeah. I mean, I think when we met, we were, you know, heading into our mid-30s. So we had already formed ideas about what we were wanting. So I think we kind of were pretty upfront about that and we aligned on it. So it, it worked out pretty well.
It was about 6 months. And I remember it because we were sitting in a restaurant in Bright, which is where Justin's from.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just coming up to finishing his MBA and I kind of said to him, so what's planned after the MBA? Thinking, travel or do another double degree or something.
A dog or something.
And the answer was pretty much, I'm going to have a family. Are you on board? And that was kind of, all right. And that was kind of our conversation starter.
This is the beauty of your story. It just gives me goosebumps immediately. So talk me through that conversation because obviously when you align with somebody in this world and you want to have children with them, that's a big thing. So what was it like at that moment in time and the couple of weeks after where you sort of thought, right, this is where we're going to go to now?
I really don't feel like it was that momentum for us. I think it was so easy.
Right.
Raised that it was something I was interested in and Adam, as Adam is always very supportive and on board with it. And it really just kind of kicked into, okay, so how are we going to do this now?
Yeah, that was kind of the catalyst for it. And having kids is something that I'd always wanted to do, but had kind of come to accept that as a gay man, it may not ever happen for me. And the relationships that I'd been in, it just wasn't something that was even possible talked about, it wasn't something that I thought I was ready or comfortable to even broach. But Justin saying that kind of just made it, yeah, it just made sense and seemed easy. And yeah, okay, cool.
Isn't that gorgeous? Let's go. So tell me about, okay, I'm interested to understand your family life. So yep. I just found out earlier that you were from Tarramarra, which
yes.
is also where I currently am. So we're both from the Upper North Shore. Everybody get excited. So tell me about your family. So what is it that you saw or perhaps has influenced or contributed to this decision to want to have children together?
I suppose. So I've got two brothers and two younger brothers and a younger stepbrother. So my parents separated when I was, I'm going to say 16, mm-hmm. 17, kind of coming to the end of school. And they're both now with their respective partners who they've been with for 20 plus years, really. Mm-hmm. And I suppose for me, that strong familial bond had always been there, but also the fact that, you know, the construct of what is a family and, you know, mum, dad, two kids, that sort of thing was never... It was never traditional for mm-hmm. us because I had four parents. Mm-hmm. I had step siblings and this huge extended family that sort of doubled almost overnight for us. So for me, it was really that close bond was always there. Mm-hmm. And it was always really important to me and something that I always really liked having was that strong relationship. So
have you always loved children?
Yeah.
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 And I think my experiences is almost the opposite in a way. Like I had a very standard nuclear family, one brother, two parents, they're still together now. And I think, I very much wanted to replicate that, but being a kid, you know, coming to terms with my homosexuality, mm-hmm. Knowing that the possibility I couldn't have a family actually prevented me from coming out a lot earlier right. than I wanted to.
Okay.
So, you know, a few years down the track, I'd kind of been through that journey and much more comfortable with myself, started to see, you know, other people being able to have families and that being a reality by many different means. And then it started to give me the idea, wow, I could actually have this. This is what I wanted. Mm. What kept me from embracing my gayness for such a long time. and you know, that's very exciting. And I mean, that's kind of, you know, driven our yeah. desire to create, you know, the family that we choose, that we want.
Because it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because obviously in Australia we're a little further behind, if you will, in terms yeah. of other countries and embracing sort of same-sex couples and indeed marriage and then family. So in terms of where you are now and what you would say to, as I said earlier, it can be quite a polarizing topic for many still, you know, what kind of, you know, opinions and inputs have you had from people in terms of, you know, their thoughts around what you're trying to achieve?
I'd say nothing negative, mm-hmm. Certainly from the people that we've spoken with and not just from immediate friends or family or people within our close circle and what we're doing, but people who are kind of just coming on the journey and sort of knowing what we're doing, you know, work colleagues or friends of friends or people at a party that you speak to or whatever it might be. It's been only positive feedback, but the thing that I get most is that, or I guess it's really no different to anyone else going through their own surrogacy journey, like a traditional straight couple or someone going through IVF and the truth is that it's not.
And I think the timing that we're going through this very much feeds into why, because, you know, there is gay marriage now, obviously. And gay parents having their own kids through surrogacy out of the means has been something that's really been happening for 20 years.
Yeah.
And so I think it's becoming much more normal, you know, in most people's eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's some quite high profile gay couples with kids.
Yeah. Well, I have my best friend from my teens who now has three children wow. in his marriage with his partner, and they're beautiful, you know. And I think, you know, you rewind 10 years ago, the conversation would have been around, well, can they really still get the same upbringing, the same childhood that, yeah. you know, we from a standard nuclear family or the traditional, you know, belief of what a nuclear family looked like. And I see these children, they are exquisite. I mean, they're just so well-rounded and, you know, beautiful children. And, you know, I always, you know, this is why today's topic for me is just so beautiful, because I think there's so much to kind of explore and unpick here, because obviously going through surrogacy is hard enough in itself. You know, how in Australia with the challenges and obviously the regulatory environment that we have here, how are you going about, obviously other than me offering up my uterus, how are you going? Where are you up to? Tell me what's happening.
Should we start at the beginning? I feel like it's, because it's been such a process, I think it's kind of important to kind of, this is where we started.
That'd be amazing.
And these are kind of all the decisions that happened.
Go right back. Beginning.
Genesis.
I'm like bated breath on this one.
So I think when we first started, you know, I'd heard about international surrogacy and thought, well, that's expensive. I'm probably not going to be able to go there. So where we started was we started looking into adoption. And we went along to an information night that was run by a Victorian government department, not sure exactly who it was at the time. And it was a room full of about 100 people, and they were talking about what adoption looks like now, mm-hmm. As opposed to what it looked like 20 to 30 years ago when there were lots of kids who required or needed family adoption. And we learned in that first meeting that in the year before, the data that they had on a year in the whole state of Victoria, there were 13 adoptions.
Yeah, that was 2018. That was 2018.
Yeah.
13.
And there were 100 people just in the room on that night in that one section of the state, and you could feel the anxiety and the competitiveness in the room already. Just
13, and of how many children that were needing it?
Thousands.
Wait. So, I mean, it's a different system now, adoption. And look, I'm no expert on it, but largely adoption is a last resort. Keeping kids at home with their families is, with support, is what, you know, the gold standard or what they aim to do nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when it comes to actually adopting a child to, you know, new parents, there's really only a small amount that happens. And even then, they do try and keep the birth mother or the birth family or extended family involved after the adoption as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So you did the first night of the adoption information evening.
Yeah. We were interested in that. We were going to follow it through. However, they had a requirement that you had to have proof of being in a relationship for 2 years or be married. At that point, we weren't married. We'd only been together for 6 to 9 months, I think. And so it was something that had to go on the back burner for a while.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we kind of started to do some of the background work to prove our relationship, and the thought that, well, if adoption is something that we want to go down, we're going to have all this together. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this was before gay marriage officially came in. So we were putting in
joint bank accounts and changing my address to Justin's address so that, you know,
all sorts of things.
The paper trail.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Which, I mean, it's understandable. They want to make sure that any child that is going to be going to a couple, that it's a stable couple and it's the best environment possible.
Of course.
So, yeah. Understandable. It our timing for that option wasn't right at that time.
Yeah. So I guess from there we moved on to really another two options in parallel. One of them was fostering, mm-hmm. Which in the same vein as adoption, it's a very lengthy, competitive process where fostering a child out is, again, the last resort.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as parents, it's one of those hard things. You kind of want to do something that's good like that, but at the same time, does it actually give you the same impact as a parent that you want and that you desire?
Yes.
And you know, you want to help kids, but it's not like they're fostering out 6 or 7 month old babies.
Yes,
they're,
that's right.
You know, 10-year-old kids that are coming from broken homes that need a lot of care, and you kind of think, well, you don't know. Are you at that stage? Are you ready to do that?
Mm.
So that was something that we did a little bit of exploring in that again, but it kind of fell into the same basket as adoption. It was really, we've got to do a bit of work before we're even there. So one of the things that we really did heavily explore was co-parenting.
Okay. Pardon my ignorance. What is co-parenting?
So effectively it's where more than one couple or more than one parent might not necessarily be together will have a child and raise this child together. So
Well, I mean, co-parenting is essentially what couples that separate do.
Right, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Okay.
However, yes. this is really kind of thinking it from the nexus of the creation of a child, where it's actually two individuals or three or two couples or however the configuration is, engage in an agreement, I guess, not a legal agreement, but an understanding that you're going to have a child together and that you will work together to raise that child.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big step. I mean, I co-parent. I'm obviously a single mom, and I co-parent with my ex-husband. And you'd have to make sure you were really in quite close lockstep with the other co-parent. I can see there's probably a number of benefits, but I can also see there's probably a number of challenges
and,
as well.
Yeah, absolute huge risks. And we came to learn about those as we – got to know people who were interested. So there were websites out there that you can meet other people. And we did meet some people along the way and started to talk about the possibility of doing it with them. And we learned a lot and found there were ups and downs and challenges along the way.
Okay.
I guess ultimately there were a few things that we were worried about. It was, if this other person or family moved away, we would have to move with them. So we're kind of, you're very tied to someone.
Yeah.
And for us, we were looking at people who we didn't know.
Yeah.
So really, trying to plan out your future with people that you don't really know that well.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent a fair bit of time trying to get to know one person in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, she decided, look, this is probably not the right time for her.
Okay.
It was probably a good thing too, because I think if we had gone down that path, it could have been amazing, who knows, but I think we really struggled on that because of there's someone else that is outside of our family or outside of our relationship that is having input into our decisions and it,
of course,
with our children
and vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd have these two people who would be, we'd be inflicting our own ideas and what we want onto someone else. Like it was a fascinating and interesting thing to look at. But also when it came down to it, kind of aspects of it were a little unfair almost.
Yeah. So through that experience, was it then that you then moved into looking at surrogacy as the primary option? Okay.
Yeah. And several years before, had considered that it probably was not within our realms financially,
mm-hmm.
Was probably too complicated, but maybe going through looking at all these other opportunities, it started to seem a lot more attractive to us. And I just happened to talk to a friend about it and, everything that we'd been trying to do. And she said, I've got some other friends who were also a gay couple who had just successfully had a child in Canada. Through surrogacy.
Okay.
So we thought, that sounds interesting. And, we knew how much it costs in the US, which was considerably more because of their system. And we'd also heard stories about other countries where there were, much more risks, where people had a really hard time getting kids out of the country really just kind of getting home with a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so this suggestion of Canada kind of seemed like one that balanced a couple of our priorities. So safety in the process, security, I guess, but also financial as well. So Canada, their system is altruistic.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit like Australia, but different in many ways as well. So Australia, you can only engage in surrogacy where, it's an altruistic process. However, there isn't any of the structure or the kind of the legalities to support it. In Canada, it's similar. However, there's a whole system that supports surrogacy. There's agencies with donors and surrogates, and there's greater legal framework around
it. It's a regulated process over there, as opposed to Australia, where it isn't.
So talk me through that. So here in Australia, if you wanted to proceed with a surrogacy, what does that look like? Just finding somebody that's happy to do it
so
for you?
So the trick in Australia is that surrogacy itself is not illegal in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally fine. Where the legalities come into it is that you can't solicit for a surrogate.
Okay.
So there's no agency set up to match people mm-hmm. with surrogates, and you can't go out there and say, I'm looking for a surrogate, I've got embryos, we want to be dads, we need a surrogate, will you be our surrogate kind of thing. That's just not allowed.
Okay.
So you've got really got to know someone, or you've kind of got to be a bit circumspect about it. Like,
sure.
Hey, we're on this journey. Would someone like to be on this journey with us kind of thing?
Okay.
So whereas in Canada, that framework is there in law. So they've got this, it's a massive business.
Okay. And you've mentioned a couple of times about the financial constraints of surrogacy.
Yeah.
So is that one country to another, or is that just, is surrogacy in itself a very expensive option? What does the cost look like?
So in Canada, roughly from start to finish, you're probably looking around 150,000 Australian.
Right. Okay.
Depending on your journey.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we've gone, the journey that we've gone on is with, so you've got your egg donor, mm-hmm. the agency and the egg donor.
Yes.
You've got your clinic, which does all the medical, the actual procedure and everything. And then you've got the surrogacy agency. So we've signed up with our clinic to do what they refer to as a guaranteed live birth.
Okay.
Which means that we can have as many transfer attempts with as many surrogates as it takes for us to get to have a live birth child.
Right.
Rather than having to pay each time or start the process again or anything like that. So we've paid a little bit more up front.
Okay.
To have that, I guess, guarantee and that security behind us, in that we don't have to be worrying about that aspect or how much money is this actually going to cost each time.
Like, as women on IVF probably understand. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, this is probably some of these questions that I'm not sure whether you ask or not, but so where do they find the mums from?
So it's everywhere.
So if you were willing and able, you can put your yourself up to one of these agencies.
So we've used the word altruistic a couple of times. So I guess if you don't know what that means, it's essentially the two differences between Canada and the United States mm-hmm. is that in the United States, the surrogates will get a fee. They'll get paid for being a surrogate, and that will be anywhere from 20 to 50,000 US just for being the surrogate.
Yes.
In Canada, like Australia, it's altruistic, which means that the surrogates don't get paid. They get reimbursed their reasonable medical expenses.
Okay.
And things like, if you're pregnant and you need to be on bed rest, the intended parents would pay for loss of wages or childcare or anything, things like that. So effectively the surrogates aren't out of pocket,
mm-hmm.
but they don't get paid either.
And how so do you take your, it's your, what's the word? so talk me through the process. Yeah. Talk me through the process here and how this works, because presumably you're contributing to this.
So step one really for us was matching with an egg donor.
Okay.
So essentially that was a little bit like another dating site in a sense that we got access to a page of all these different women who wanted to be egg donors. And so the process for us for picking one was, how do you choose that? You know, we have in some respects the privilege of being able to choose, some of the possible features of a child.
Mm-hmm.
So we really-
And what were you looking for?
Well, I mean, we're both light-haired, so we thought we'd balance it out with someone who was dark-haired.
Oh, okay.
And ultimately, we just looked for someone who was friendly.
Yeah.
A lot of the profiles, as on dating sites, people kind of show a bit of their personality in their photos, and we just went for someone who just seemed nice.
Fascinating. Yeah. Keep going. I'm so fascinated.
And she was nice. And so we picked her, and she...
Do you meet her, or is it...
No, so online. So that's one of the other, you can either choose to know the egg donor or have a known or an unknown donation. So unknown is you see a picture of them and get some details and that's it.
Okay.
A known one is that you can actually have a conversation with them and get to know them, and you can opt to have an ongoing relationship with them if you both want.
Okay.
But also when the child is born and turns 18,
mm-hmm.
they have the ability to go and get the contact details of the egg donor and actually contact them.
Okay.
And the egg donor consents to saying, yeah, I'm happy for that.
So is the egg donor the person also then that carries the baby?
No.
Okay.
No. So separate.
So that's next step.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they're deliberately separate in Canada.
It's very deliberate in most places.
So our donor went on some treatment and then produced 40 eggs for us. And then we traveled to Canada and we provided our sample. And
noted
50%
sample.
And who decides which one? How did you decide?
So we fertilized 20. We split them down the middle and fertilized 20 each.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
And from there, the clinic goes through a process of freeze. They let them grow to 3 days, mm-hmm. and then they test them. And from that, some have not fertilized or died off.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to 5 days and they do further genetic testing.
Okay.
So I think of that 20 each, Justin ended up with?
I think all in that we ended up with about 12 or 15, I think, between the two of us.
And these were good embryos. Strong so embryos, there were more embryos which were poor quality, which don't get used. And then there are some which what they refer to as mosaic, which means that they have a higher risk of congenital heart defects, Down syndrome, lots of birth defects that are dangerous for the mother as well. And they're retained, but they're not, they're kind of on absolute backup.
They're on backup, their plan B.
Basically.
So of the eggs that you were viable, how many of those now then will get implanted into the surrogate?
Well, Canada only does one at a time.
So one at a time.
Yeah.
So you're not going to end up with triplets or anything?
Unless the embryo splits.
Only through naturally occurring, not through multiple implants.
So that's one of the differences with
Best
the US.
Luck, I'm a twin. I know my parents aren't there.
my dad's twin as well. So, I mean, I'm hopeful.
Oh, my God, I was going to say you could. It's schizogeneration bile account. But anyway, keep going.
So they only implant one at a time.
Okay.
And I guess that's the next step, really. They need somewhere to implant them. So once we had those embryos created, we engaged with the surrogacy agency.
Okay.
And so this is where it kind of gets a little bit challenging, I guess, with Canada, because it's an altruistic process. There are the number of available surrogates outstrips, no, other way around. The number of people interested in having a child through surrogacy outstrips the number of available surrogates in Canada.
To what number?
We don't know the actual figures, but certainly what it translates into is long wait times.
Okay.
And the process.
How long do we know roughly? Do you have an idea?
From the initially, and so with our the first surrogate that we matched with, from the time we started looking to the time we matched with her was only 3 months.
Okay.
And they were kind of saying you should expect about 3 to 6 months to match with a surrogate.
Okay.
Like, okay, that's really good. We're actually.
Yeah, and then. And we'll talk about this in a minute, but we also had a second time and that was longer. And actually they'd extended the expected wait times kind of the second time we went in looking for one.
Okay.
So I guess we'll talk through. So we matched within 3 months with a really lovely woman who was very keen to be a surrogate. And it takes about 3 or 4 months to kind of do all the legal stuff, get to know them, because you really want to have a good relationship with someone. And any child that eventuated from this arrangement, from this relationship, to know, you know, how they came about and who they came from and one day maybe visit them. So it's really important to us to get to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they recommend as part of the process too.
Okay.
And then, so this is going back maybe almost, I want to say a year and a half now.
Okay.
Middle of 2020.
Yeah. And it was locked down here. But we were able to progress over there. So we were quite lucky that we got over to Canada when we did, the end of 2019. And so mid-2020, we had our first transfer. And that was an experience in itself.
Okay.
So
tell me more. Do I need some tissues now?
No, it's just it's an unusual feeling sitting in your living room in Caulfield in Melbourne while over in the other side of the world in Toronto. You're getting messages from this surrogate who you've been spending the last 4 months getting to know. And she's kind of saying, hey, just going in now to have your embryo implanted and maybe have a baby for you. It's kind of like, oh, God, what are we?
It's pretty exciting.
How do you celebrate? What do you do? What do you do like?
And I'm one of these people that at Christmas typically go and open my Christmas presents first, so because I can't handle the anticipation. So can you tell me what happened? Because I'm just like, so I'm dying to know.
So the first transfer was unsuccessful. So nothing ever came for it. And actually, we kept on going with that surrogate. We actually had four in total. So we had four embryos implanted over the course of about 5 months or okay. 6 months. And unfortunately, none of them took.
And do they know why?
No. And I suppose this is the thing, like with any couple trying to get pregnant, it could happen in accidentally. It could happen, you know, all right, let's try first bang, go bang, and or it might be months and there's just no.
But we do know that our embryos are tested as healthy.
Okay.
So we know that there's nothing wrong with what's going in.
Mm.
So what the theory is that potentially maybe the surrogate had like a hyper immune system.
Okay.
And it didn't allow the embryo to attach properly and to grow.
Sure. Okay.
There's huge amounts of testing and medication and different techniques go into making it work and it just didn't.
Didn't work. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where to from there? So you obviously, at which point did you decide, okay, that was enough with
yeah, so they kind of
lovely lady.
The clinic kind of says, look, three transfers is generally where they say it's not going to work.
Okay.
Now, Justin and I were lucky in that we had a substantial number of embryos to our name at this point. And three of the transfers had been with Justin's embryos because we decided right at the start, Justin's with it. We were going to go with Justin's embryos first and foremost.
Okay.
Because for the genetic connection to the child was really important to Justin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say not so much for me, but, you know, I'm kind of
not. Well, there's always a.
It's going to be my child regardless of whether it's Justin's or mine. Like,
yes,
I'm not. Exactly. Yeah, my mindset isn't like that. But so after the third transfer, we were talking with the doctor and he suggested that we move to go with one of mine and have her on no medication to effectively try and trick her body into saying, oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yes. Yeah.
Which didn't work. And after that point, they kind of said, it's just, you guys don't match.
Yep.
It's just not going to work.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's maddening the impossible.
It was between three and four. Like after three, it was pretty much, we knew that it probably wouldn't work, but we had a good relationship with her and we really wanted it to work for her as well because she really wanted it too and she was really in it with us. So we thought, okay, the doctor's suggesting that there's a possibility that if we try something a little bit differently, it might work.
Yeah.
It didn't. So we went into that fourth one, everybody knowing that, you know, this was the last time we would try this because, you know, ultimately we're here for a baby and if it's not working, we need to try something else.
Yeah. So when that didn't work, unfortunately, we kind of had to go back to almost square one with finding a surrogate, which meant we went back to our agency and said, we need to get back on the match list and start looking for a new surrogate. And this was end of 2020 and they were kind of saying it's probably 6 to 9 months before your match.
Is that 6 to 9 months now because in that time that you'd been trying, more people had come into the system or just because
a mixture of more intended parents coming into the system.
Right.
COVID had kind of turned a lot of people off being surrogates, but with travel restrictions that were in place and getting around, because a lot of this is done in Canada, in either Toronto, most of it's done in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Canada is kind of similar in size to Australia in terms of landmass. So you're not... Surrogates are coming from everywhere.
Mm.
So it's kind of like asking a surrogate to come from Perth to Sydney for a day procedure. Yeah. Like it's the travel at that time was not appealing for a lot of people.
Yeah. And in some cases, impossible to do.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. Absolutely. Back onto the rematch list. And that was last year was really pretty taxing on both of us in terms of that process.
Okay.
And a little disheartening in some cases.
Yeah. I mean, I guess kind of jumping back a little bit, each transfer was an emotional roller coaster because you go into it, and particularly the first one, you go into it and you know once you kind of have that transfer and you're waiting for a result, you start to think about it. And I mean, sure, every parent that has had difficulty conceiving, you know, goes and talks about how difficult it can be when things don't go to plan. But you start thinking about, you know, when it might be due, and, you know, you let yourself kind of get a bit excited about it.
Of course.
And then when it doesn't work, it's devastating.
Yeah.
That was interesting because I was only talking to a girl today, a young girl, she's in her early 30s, and she said her partner and her have been trying for 6 months. And she said, it's funny, you know, I've spent all my 20s trying to avoid getting pregnant. And she said, now that I'm ready to get pregnant, I can't.
Yeah.
And I thought, it's interesting because, you know, as we alluded to in the beginning of the podcast, like there's so many stories like that out there. You know, everyone's searching for the same outcome, but 9 times out of 10, it's significantly harder than you think. And I was interested, I suppose, from that, as you just alluded to, trying to get pregnant can be quite, you know, even when you've got sort of everything working with you, in your case, a lot of things working against you. How was the impact on your relationship?
I think in terms of our relationship, you know, we've got a good strong relationship, and we you know, navigate things together regardless. Yeah. So I think from that perspective, and because we're over here together and this is happening over there, we're kind of a team and we're working through this. So I think from that perspective, and we know what we've put into it is working. So maybe if it was another couple and there's some confusion about, you know, who in the couple, maybe perhaps it's not working for, it might be more of a strain on that relationship. But I think for us, whilst we did have these difficulties, that we worked through them together.
Yeah.
And really, it was interesting. I think after each transfer was unsuccessful and we got that news, it kind of took a couple of days to reset.
Of course.
To really feel the weight of it, and then try and kind of, okay, what's the next step? How are we going to do this? When there was a pathway to try something again, that's when things felt good. And so, okay, we're going to go again.
So where are you now? Where in the journey are you now?
So we... right now, speaking with a new surrogate.
Okay.
So we actually
in Canada.
In Canada. Yeah, yep. So still in Canada. We actually, when we went onto the rematch list, it was suggested by our agency that we create a Facebook page, which we can promote throughout Canada.
Okay.
Saying that we were looking for a surrogate, because we were getting maybe 5 or 6 profiles a week. Of potential candidates, and effectively the agency sends you an email and says, here's four potential surrogates. Mm-hmm. Like here's a fact sheet on each one.
Okay.
And we might get that once or twice a week. And you've got to really respond
in the middle of the night.
The minute it comes in.
Oh, so this is going out to everybody that's on the list as opposed to just you. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like... It's a bit like F45 class availability.
Yeah.
You got to be on it. You got to be like, right.
So we're having alarms go off at like 1 o'clock in the morning to check our emails and...
Oh, my gosh.
Right. It's pretty daunting stuff.
But, I mean, so a surrogate that might be putting their hand up to go into this process might be getting 100, 150, who knows? We don't know. They don't share that information with us. But you are one interested couple amongst a sea of other interested couples, and they've got to pick one to move ahead with.
Wow.
So we spent 6 or 7 months just really with no progress.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I think we got 50 profiles and we said yes to 42 of them.
We were tracking it, yeah.
Yeah.
And how many people that tried the surrogacy program or attempt in Canada, what percentage, you know, are having a successful and having a baby?
It's hard to say figures wise, but you know we've met plenty of friends within our own circle. So you know, the original couple who'd had a baby in Canada, and you know, other couples who've had kids through surrogacy in other countries. So I mean, it's something that kind of helps keep us going because everyone says you got to have faith and you've got to keep trying because it'll happen eventually.
Yeah,
even in those really hard times when it feels like, you know, this could go on forever. And we could just be really unlucky and never get there.
It is a high number, but it does it's really the dropout rate of intended parents as opposed to surrogates.
Okay.
So it's the intended parents who are maybe going a year without matching with anyone and just going, this isn't going to happen for us. We can't. do this anymore.
What is it from the surrogate mums that that put their hand up? Why do they do it?
This is what we really like about Canada. It's kind of just out of the goodness of their heart because they're not getting paid.
Like I said, this is probably at the end of this. I'm in a
paid uterus. But it is. I mean, that was kind of what drew us to Canada in this process, is because we like the idea, this story that we're eventually going to be telling our child, is that this lovely woman in the other side of the world really wanted to help us be dads.
It's a big thing.
Yeah.
Having, you know, two children myself, and I love being pregnant. I mean, I was sick for 6 months of it, but I loved it, you know. I mean, I didn't like the ensuing 12 months of being chubby and these enormous big boobs, but you know, the process in the last couple of months is the most beautiful thing. You know, it's always that way. I always wonder, what are the risks then that, you know, you've had this beautiful relationship with a surrogate? I mean, are there stories that where mums decide to keep the babies, or is that, is that a risk that is a reality?
Yeah, in some countries, yes. I suppose the benefit of the system in Canada and the US, and you know, even places like Russia and Ukraine, topical, and the UK and other places where it is an actual legal thing to do, is that the contract law around it is really strong, so that there is very little to no risk that the mother's going to turn around and say, oh, no, I want to keep it.
Yeah.
And vice versa as well, protections for those mothers, because as Australia has seen in the past, there have been people who've rejected their children, the children born from that surrogate. Don't know if you remember the little Gammy story from Thailand from, I guess, 15 years ago.
Baby Gammy, yeah.
Where there were twins born, but one of them was, I think, intellectually disabled or had some sort of disability. And they chose not to take that child with them back home.
I actually do remember that. Yeah. I do remember now you're talking about that. That was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Do we know what happened with that little baby?
I don't actually, to be honest.
The surrogate raised.
And ended up raising the family child. Yeah. So talking then, obviously, you're still obviously in the Canadian system.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, what would you like to change about the Australian system to make it an easier or better process?
I think bringing it in lockstep with what's available in Canada and the US to really, I guess, draw out some of the, I guess, bring it out of the shadows a little bit more.
Probably not the US in terms of the kind of the
paying for it, the fee.
For service, yeah. But certainly, I mean, culturally Canada is very much like Australia. And if we over here could replicate, you know, what they're doing there, I think that would make it a lot easier. It would make our experience a lot easier as well.
Mm.
You know, you don't go halfway, completely the other side of the world to do this unless you really have to.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of your advice to other dads or other couples that are looking to do the surrogacy journey, I mean, what's your advice to them?
It's really hard because we're in a position at the moment where we're not finished. We've matched with a new surrogate and we're hoping to go ahead with transfers in a couple of months, and hopefully, you know, we'll have more success that time. And after that, you know, we might provide completely different advice. There have been really great moments in this process where things have been really easy, and there have been other times where we felt really in some ways kind of trapped into doing surrogacy in Canada, because we've got this guarantee program. If we walk away, you know, we lose the money, and we don't have anything to show for everything that we've invested into it. You know, the outcome, a child, which is what we want. So I think ultimately you really just got to get advice from, you know, the people that who have been through this successfully before, and choose which option works best for you.
Okay.
Don't give in and speak to everyone that you can.
Don't give in and speak to everyone that you can.
I got you. There's lots of sort of organisations and groups that you can reach out to throughout Victoria and Australia. People like Rainbow Families within Victoria. They provide great support for people who are going through the journey.
Yeah.
And lots of information about it. And there's lots of Facebook groups that you can join as well for people who've had kids overseas, be it the same country that you're looking at or different ones, and you can really strike up some good relationships and conversations with them.
Okay. And so just hypothetically speaking, let's fast forward a year or two and you are successful in this journey, which I no doubt you will be. What does parenthood and little Roe family look like on a day-to-day basis?
I feel like we've been preparing for this for, you know, a good year and a half.
Yeah.
So we've kind of moved from the city to the country to, you know, an environment that we, you know, we felt would be the most conducive to raising a family.
Okay.
A bit more space, a bit more quiet.
Yes.
So, you know, we really just kind of want to get through this, you know, first hurdle of having a child and then have a think about what completing a family would look like for us. At this point, it's just there's two of us and one child, and we would be so happy with that.
Amazing. And what is it? So when you know you typically look at a traditional family, there's a stay at home parent, either mum or the dad. These days, it's, you know, neither one is more common than the other. So what does that look like? Have you discussed that? And what does that look like for your family?
So have discussed it. At this stage, it could change again. But yeah. Justin was kind of keen to take a step back career-wise and do some stay-at-home parenting for 6-12 months, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for us, like, you know, many young families to have that first 12 months.
Yes.
And then they recommend it, even within the adoption processes, that you need to be able to take 12 months off work to invest in the development of your child.
Yeah.
And look, I mean, you know, those ideas that we have are informed by all the friends that we've had, you know, that take extended time off and then go back to work gradually.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with the support of family, we'd like to kind of find that right balance, like, you know, modern parenting is.
Yes.
I can't see either of us being off work until, you know, their child is six, like my mother did. but certainly we want to, you know, ensure that we give our child the best start in life.
Mm-hmm.
By being there, by being around.
And what is the
I was about to say one of the good things that's come out of COVID is obviously you know, flexible working is now an actual reality.
Mm-hmm.
I know we both work in government, and my agency was always very flexible working. We always offer it, and they don't. It's just not a thing.
Exactly. The reality of that.
Now they've seen that we can actually still deliver what we need to do while sitting at home.
Yeah.
It's I think that will add an extra layer of benefit to us as well.
Mm. And what are you most looking forward to about being a parent?
Oh, I don't know.
Because here's my question. Do you like sleep?
yeah. Everyone kind of says, you know, you're never going to sleep, and you guys like going out for, you know, a nice dinner. Don't get used to that anymore when you have a kid. And I kind of go, I'm not changing, you know, I'm going to have a kid. I'm not changing the way I am, kind of thing. And that's the look. I get that look from people all the time going, oh, yeah, it's a good thing to say, isn't
so
it?
Naive.
Oh, are you so, yeah, idiot. but I don't know how to answer what I'm most looking forward to about being a parent. I'm just...
Yeah, look, I think part of the challenge
everything.
Of this being quite a long journey is that, and being so uncertain, is it kind of stops you from thinking about that a little bit, because when you do... And then things kind of go off the rails again. It makes it harder. So I think what we've kind of learned is to just kind of focus on this first step in front of us. And then all the good stuff and all the hard stuff will come from that, and we can prepare ourselves when we know we're getting on that path. But I think to think too much about it or to prepare too much for it at this point, it just makes, when things don't work, it makes it harder. And, you know, there's so many parents out there that kind of have difficulty in, you know, we haven't experienced anything like a miscarriage. I can't imagine what that would be like, where you've kind of gone so far down the path and then it's not gone well.
Mm.
But I can talk from our experiences of all the kind of ups and downs of this. It's kind of hard to think about what the reality is going to be, because we've gone there and tried that, and it's really kind of been hard to kind of take that away again.
Yes. Yep.
So, yeah, I think it's a difficult one.
And your parents, are they excited about becoming grandparents?
Yes.
Are they grandparents? Somebody has a nephew or a niece.
I've got two nephews.
Okay.
And Justin's brother's just had his first.
Yeah, so the pressure's come off a little bit in my family. Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah.
And, well, as I said to you, when I first met you, I obviously have two children that you can really try and cut your teeth on. I'm really, pull the cord. So looking at, again, just looking further ahead, obviously in this little world, you know, in a world where there's, you know, probably more parents like yourself or couples like yourself, you know, trying now that they, you know, now that it's becoming more of a regular thing, you know, what are you hoping, you know, if there's one thing that you could say to all of those aspiring, you know, same-sex couple partnerships and marriages looking to have children, what is the one thing that you would like to say to them?
I think, I mean, one of the things that has been said to us is just keep positive and keep trying. If this is something you want to do, it is possible now. We are so lucky to be living in a time where as gay men, there's more acceptance than ever. You can get married, you can have children. And it's not easy. And everybody says it takes time and there's ups and downs. And whilst we're not there yet, everyone says the same thing. You just have to stick it out because it'll work eventually. And that's what I'm holding on to at the moment. So I think that's kind of what I think is the best thing to pass down the line.
And I suppose the thing that I'd add to that is that it's a lot more common than you think it is. Okay. I mean, you kind of sit back and go, oh, yeah, we know a few people that have done this, but not many. And then the more you talk to people, the more people say, I've got two or three friends, same-sex couple friends who have had kids through various different ways and means. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, don't think that you're going to be raising a child in an environment where it's a minority or an outcast or some horrible conception that it's going to be difficult, because it's today it's really not.
Mm. And do some of those sort of stereotypes or some of the prejudices that we have, you know, have been aware of in, you know, decades before, do they still exist, do you think?
Look, yeah, to some extent. I don't think you can say they don't, mm-hmm. Because at some point a stereotype or a prejudice exists at every level for everyone.
Yeah.
But I will say that while they exist, the support for it is a lot stronger,
yeah,
a lot more visible. And, yeah, I kind of think we're at a point where it's not a taboo subject and it's not seen as a negative thing.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, I could honestly keep talking and talking, and I can feel myself getting more, I'm getting more emotional as you're talking with this one. And I feel like there's a million questions I would love to keep asking you. And I think we might even have part two of this journey, because I feel like there's, you know, in 6 months' time, there might be another development that we might want to keep on top of. So I don't know about you, but I would love to have you back to get a regular installment in terms of where you're at with the journey. And we might even invite some other people who are probably earlier in on the journey and see if we can impart some advice for them.
Yeah,
if you're open
absolutely.
For that,
that'd be
we'll
great.
Be in touch. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today, and thank you so much for sharing your heartwarming journey. This has been a story like no other, and we wish you nothing but the best for the future and look forward to hearing the next installment of your story. So we sincerely hope that today's discussion has opened up more conversations for other families, and we would welcome any questions you might have. I'm sure the boys would be happy to answer them. As always, for more tips from our experts, please visit our Little Oak website, www.thelittleoakcompany.com. As always, you can download this issue of This Little Life from your favourite podcast platform. Gentlemen, thank you once again.